From the Gemara, paid down on base. The Gemara says, fine, we do the shlichos, but we only do the shlichos of the midi de kimlon begave, right? Something which we know, like, exactly how much it is. But something which is low kimlon begave, Rashi says, like over here, we're going to have to do a shuma, you have to do an evaluation, right? So then we're not gonna do it. The Gemara says, okay, like logically, the Gemara accepts that as a reasonable possibility, right? But Niske shore also. I mean, how much is a shore worth when you damage somebody's shore? So you're gonna have to go and evaluate how much of the shore market does a shore work, and is it worth? You're gonna have to ultimately evaluate that also. So it's not really an exact fixed amount. So what's the difference? I mean, it's like a nice idea, but it doesn't really help solve the case. Right? We're trying to figure out, back to what's going on here, right? Why you do Niske Shor, but you don't do Niske Adam. Shor gets damaged, you'll judge him Bavel because of Shichu Sahu. And if a person gets damaged, you won't, because we don't know why, right? Because apparently, even though you need Elohim, Shichu Sahu gets around that. But now it's saying the Shlichus is limited to Midi to Kimle Begave, so then we can know we don't have to estimate. But both of them you have to estimate. Either go to the shore market or the slave market. What's really the difference? I think Gemara throws in all of a sudden a new thing. And also, that not only does that not work, because another piece of information, not only we're Don Niske Shore, but we're also Don, and we're not Don Niske Adam, we're also don't do Kefel. If you steal a shore, you pay Karen, or if you damage a shore, you'll pay Karen. But you're not going to pay Kefel or Dal Vahe, so that's fixed. So why wouldn't you, right? That's for certainly, once you get the Karen down, which we do, then just double it or quadruple it, right? So why would you not do that if the whole factor is whether something is fixed or not, right? That's Gemara's question. So, you know, it's a pretty good knockout. I don't think Gemara didn't get up from that one. That's it. You have to move on to a new theory. Question is, what was the theory? And to a lesser degree, like, why did Gemara bring it in? It's like such an obvious response. What was Umar thinking? And I'm not sure you're going to be able to answer those questions, but we'll try our best here. Okay. So one step we can take is that the Gemara right now is developing the idea of Shlichus Sahu. It's not just throwing out another, it's not like it brought up Elohim, then Shlichus Sahu takes care of it, and now it's moved on to other points, which it will. It says kikav dinen shlichus sahu b'midi de kimlam begave b'midi de lo kimlam begave lo of dinen shlichus sahu, right? So the idea is like, it's true there's a shlichus, right? Mesinas reshus to be done these things, but that's limited. So it's showing you a limitation of framework of shlichus sahu. Okay, so it's already giving you a clue of how to think about it. Don't just think about this in abstract. It's a question of the nature of the shlichus. So why would the shlichus be limited to something that's kimlam begave? It's not just like a separate point of what we do in Bavel. It's something to do with what the rishus is, right? Yeah. One point that Dov pointed out is what the Gemara's maskana is the fact that Adam Badam and sorry, not just like Adam. The Niske Adam, you have to go to the slave market. Sure, you also have to go down. And there's two ways to learn that maskana. Either Gemara is saying, apparently we don't care whether it's Kimla Megave or not, even though it's not, you have to do a Shuma, and that's not considered Kimla Megave, like Shuma. That's one possibility. It's kind of how I was learning it. Gemara is just saying, apparently that's not the criteria because it doesn't work out. Because even though things require Shuma, like a Shor, you still also have to do it. But those right. The other way to learn it, which I think is better for why the Gemara brings it in, is that saying that apparently that's considered good enough since you have the market available to you and you don't just have to do guesswork, right? You get guesswork in Hanami, the shlichus would be, you couldn't, if it was just guesswork and estimations off the top of your head, then you don't have the heter of the shlichus, was just to do their shlichus in that situation. But because you have a market, they can go down and look. That's considered fixed enough. It's enough to, it is considered kimlam begave. You go down to the shore market, you go down to the slave market, that's considered good enough. So in the end of the day, the Gemara really is accepting this idea of kimlam begave. It's just saying the marketplace is sufficient for making it fixed. It's not just guesswork, right? So in the end of the day, the Gemara maintains this Havamina. It just doesn't answer the problem because you have the marketplace for both of them. So just saying one approach is that the Shlichus, they basically, it's like the Beis Din of Eretz Yisrael gives the Nesinas Shlichus, you give the Shlichus for something that's a relatively fixed process. Essentially, when you're carrying out, when there's a set of laws and you just have to apply them, okay, I don't want to exaggerate it, but it's almost like you're setting up like automatons. You're setting up people who just can follow the rules. Here's the halacha, go and implement it. You know, and like Kiddush HaChodesh, right? Kiddush HaChodesh concept. You could set something up that's like automatic, right? Just an automatic thing, follow the cheshbon. It's just a set of rules, an algorithm. Okay, so I don't want to overemphasize that because being done, the Nimamunas is just not an algorithm. You can't, it's not Kiddush HaChodesh, it's not just following calculations. That's what bothers me a little bit about this approach. But there is some sense to that, that it basically they're saying follow the rules. There's basically Shulchan Aruch. You want to implement Shulchan Aruch, implement Shulchan Aruch. But once it's going to be involved and like you personally have to go and evaluate it, there's no fixed set of rules. So then you're not really following the Beis Din of Eretz Yisrael. Now you're on your own. You're making up your own evaluations. That's not really their shlichus. You're not really following what they're saying. If they're giving you a set of rules and say, execute this din, follow these mishpatim that we've determined in Eretz Yisrael, then you apply them. You know, that they give you a shush to do, to apply the din and the mishpatim that they've set up. But just come up with your own types of intuitions and evaluations and guesses and things like that, that they didn't give you a heter for, you know? And it's basically, you know. So I was thinking that approach. Should you go ahead, Yaakov?
Isn't it not exactly true?
Because
you didn't determine who's five, who's active, is already going to be a problem. Maybe both sides have tainas.
I know. That's the problem. That's the problem with the approach. Is it just like, it's like you're turning the Nimamunas into something that like really is fixing, you know, following fixed rules. It's just like hard to conceive that that's just not what din is. It's you have to use Farah and you have to Mishire and you have judges and who's Taino who looks like a Shakran. It's just like not really true. You know, there is like a sense to the Farah, but I mean, that's the one thing. You don't want them to use their own Shikl Hadas and figure an evaluation or something like that. You know, but what about everything else that's part of the din, that's part of the Mishpat? It's just not the reality that a court case is not following an algorithm. So it's just like not really, not quite true. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like someone had to say something.
Yeah.
But also, can you...
Okay, so I mean, I think I had another reason I don't quite remember now. Maybe it'll come back to me. So let's go with this in the meantime. Is that basically the halacha is limiting the nesinas rishus to things that are relatively fixed, we'll call it, where you can follow a body of you can follow instructions. Even if you say the implementation of the dinim requires shikl hadas and svara, it's not something that's completely guesswork. And then the Gemara's answer is it's a nice theory, but why you say the niske shor is not guesswork? It's because you look at the market and that's solid enough. That's considered like you have a real point of observation, and you're not just making it up. So too here. By Niske Adam, go to the slave market. That's good enough. Okay, we'll move forward with that idea. Okay, let's go forward with that. Okay, so now we're basically just going to summarize the Gemara here from where we're up to until Vamarava. Okay, which is basically to the Gemara's primary conclusion here. Is the Gemara, so the basic Gemara says, so you get this problem, Adam Badam, why don't you do it? And also, why don't you do Kefon Dalve? Okay, so the Gemara tries to take them up one at a time, basically. It says maybe it's halacha. We do mamam. We don't do knas. And Tosa says, the top Tosa says, la'daf knas. I'm shin bless bechesr and kiss karle knas. It's not really talking about a knas. It just means something that has no chesr and kiss. So that's what it's saying. It's only things which lose money, where there's a loss of money, as opposed to things which are monetary, where you're compensating somebody for loss. Okay, and that's why you don't do kefon dal vehe. Okay, but the Gemara says, yeah, but Adam ba'Adam, one person is mechavel another person, that's chesron kiss, because he loses his money. Rashi dem fachse b'damei, like the nezek, right, is worth less now if he wants to sell himself as an eved. so you should do that. And that's the whole point here. We don't do that. Gemara says, okay, fine, new theory. It's because of shchiach. So something's not shchiach, we're not going to do it. And it's not common that one person will damage another person in a way where he really creates nezek, where he really damages that person. It all goes by shchiach. Gemara says, if you're going to go by shchiach, so then boshes you should do, right? Because boshes is common. People embarrass each other. So it's true, nezek is not common, but boshes is. And you see, basically, we don't do boshes in Bavel. We don't do boshes in Bavel because there's no chesron kiss, right? So the Gemara ends up saying, you know what? Right, each answer is insufficient on its own. The only thing you could say is the combination of two, where there's a combination of chesron kiss and shchiach. Right? You need it to be common. It's got to be a common thing that's a loss of money, right? So common occurrence where people lose money, that you can do in chutz la'aretz. So, for example, boshes, you can't do it because it's no loss of money. And adam ba'adam, just the nezek, you don't do it because it's not common. But things that are common and you lose money, like hodas and avos, lending things, or people are mozei owe money, those are common. And there's a loss of money there. That's what we'll do in Bavel. That's essentially the system. The combination of the two answers. The question is, the way the Gemara presents it, okay, in the Shakla Vatari here, is it tries to say each answer independently. Right? And then it ends up saying you need them both together. Okay? Is there anything to be gleaned from the fact that it does it that way, where it goes through these steps, as opposed to, in theory, the Gemara could have just presented the, you know, I don't know, it has all the facts, Adam Ba'adam, it asked the question, why don't we do Adam Ba'adam, and what about Kefo? So it could have said, look, you need these two criteria, Shliach and Chesron Kiss, and that answers everything. Why does it go through the whole Shaka Vataria, who presents each answer independently? Right, was there anything in the concept there? Yeah, go ahead. Right. So I think the Gemara is doing it in this way is don't think that there's some sort of unified idea that emerges from the combination of the two. That chesron kiss only makes sense together with shchiach, and shchiach makes sense only together with chesron kiss. And look for like what does the combination of these two give you? What's this new concept of combining the two? But rather, essentially, they're two separate criteria, and we just demand them both to be met. But not because it's really become some combined new property of the two together. That's what the Shaka Vatari really shows you. There is an idea, each one alone, in theory, could have been a criteria on its own. It could have been the only criteria. It just happens to be, it's not true. It basically, they created multiple criteria. But not because there's like some combined concept of Shechiyach and Chesron Kiss. Each of them are separate considerations that to do the Shlichus. Okay, so we just want to understand, what are these two criteria? So, I mean, so the basic idea, and Joe's mentioning, maybe we mentioned this last week also, is that the shlichus of the Beis Din, the shlichus is not to make the greatest society in Chutz La'aretz. Look, you want the greatest society, that's in Eretz Yisrael, where they have the full system, Mishpatim. But basically, what the Gemara is doing by the Chesron Kiss is it's conceptually dividing. It's a conceptual division of mishpatim into two categories, things that have a loss of money and things that don't. Okay? As opposed to shliach, it's like a practical division. But here's a conceptual division. It's saying not all mishpatim are created equal. Some of them are like necessary to create the highest order society, like kefel dal v'hei, where you really have a deterrence for geneva, or boshes, where you prevent people from really embarrassing each other, things like that. But then there's like a basic level of mishpat, which is necessary in order to have a functioning society. Not necessarily the highest order society in possible, but if people are, you know, making, borrowing money and they're not paying it back, you can't function as an economy that way. So the idea is that there should be an economic functioning society. Not that we're trying to implement in Chutz La'aretz the highest, perfect, most perfect society. That's Eretz Yisrael. But Chutz La'aretz, the shlichus is to allow the society to function in a normal, healthy manner. But the mishpatim that are there, more than chesron kiss, those are not necessary for the society to function on a basic level. Right? So therefore, basically, the shlichus is limited to what's necessary for the basic functioning, not to try to create, duplicate the society of Eretz Yisrael in Chutz La'aretz. Right, it's a shlichus to allow Chutz La'aretz to function, not to replicate Eretz Yisrael. Right? And therefore, it follows also that there's a second consideration. Is it even in the framework of Mishpat, of Chesron Kis, things that really are necessary for society to function? Practically, society can still function if you have things in Chesron Kis that are uncommon, infrequent. They don't happen that often. It's true, in theory, it would break down society. If it was happened on a Adam by Adam, people are mazik each other, nobody pays, things like that, it would be a disaster for society. But it happens so infrequently, it doesn't really matter. It's not going to undermine the functioning of society as a whole. In individual cases, it'll be a problem, but they're limited to individual cases. Then they'll become a systematic failure of mishpat in the society. Right. So there's basically two separate frameworks in order to limit the rishus that Beis Din gives to Beis Din itself gives to Chutz La'aretz. Is one is conceptually must be essential. It's got to be like a necessary conceptual thing. Chesron Kis. And then practically, it's got to be a problem. But if either one of those criteria is not met, because it's just knassos or whatever it is, it's things that don't that really wouldn't break the economy because there's no chesron kis. Or even if it just doesn't happen frequently enough, then if you, even though you don't have that rishus, you don't have that rishus, it's not a problem. The chutz la'aretz will go on; they'll be totally fine as a whole. And therefore, they didn't give rishus for that. I mean, the whole thing here is a heter. Essentially, it's a heter. They're mochel on their Elohim, and they say you don't have to come there to Shul to be judged, and you can just do it in Chutz La'aretz in order to allow Chutz La'aretz to function properly. Okay, I mean, and things point out something is that if you want to, you can always go to Eretz Yisrael. If somebody embarrasses you, whatever, you can always go to Eretz Yisrael and collect the money. If you both go to Eretz Yisrael and be done in Eretz Yisrael, I don't think it's your putter in Chutz La'aretz. It's just who's going to actually do that. I mean, some people might. It's, you know, travel, but it's not necessary for the society to function if it's uncommon or if it's just in the realm of things that there's no chesron kis, even if it is common. And that's the Gemara's basic conclusion, is that the shlichus and the heter of rishus is when you have these two separate criteria independently met, you know. And just in a certain sense, there is a unifying factor between them in the sense that you need, it's not really a unifying factor. It's if either one of those criteria is not met, then it wouldn't really undermine society. The only thing that really undermines society is frequent things that cause loss of money. You know, those things you can't let that go, society will fall apart. But there is like a unifying thing in terms of teleology, in terms of the purpose. When you have things that are shchiach and chesron kis, that's what society really needs to mishpat for. But if either one of those are lacking, society can go on without it. Yeah. So Yaakov was asking why are we limiting it? Why are we so stingy here? Right? What's the harm? You know, sinner shush, let them do everything. Get the ideal society, even in frequent cases. What's the big deal? Right? So one idea proposed was that they were, Joe was saying this, and they both like this, I think, sort of, is to show that if you just give rishus for everything, you lose the whole din of Elohim and Smuchim and Eretz Yisrael. So you want to make a distinction to retain the authority of the Beis Din of Eretz Yisrael, which is possible. But the question is why does the Torah do this? You know, what is the sense of that? Why have it, you know, why have it be that way? One answer is, and I had a problem with it, but one answer is that, like, the reason the Torah does this is because it wants the only thing worse than not having mishpat is having mishpat being done by people who don't know what they're doing. That really is destructive. When you have like people who are not experts and they're judging cases that are beyond their ability to judge. And that's like worse. It's almost like more corruption because you're giving power to people who don't know what they're doing. You know, it's like almost better not to have, anybody with power than to have people with power completely corrupt. You know, or I shouldn't say corrupt, but they're making mistakes. So, I don't want to say which is worse. Arguably, it's worse not to have any mishpat. You know what I mean? That might be the worst of all. But insofar as you can be giving power to people who aren't mumchem and smuchem, so then you limit it to what's absolutely necessary. Like what's not necessary, you're arguably better off not having them do things that are, in a certain sense, it's like the kimli begave. It's like, look, you're not really experts. You're not really smuchem the same level. So therefore, do what you have to do, but we don't want you, whatever you're just like doing entirely on your own, we don't want you doing it. You know what I mean? Like you just want to limit the amount of damage they can do if insofar as they're not experts. Now Yaakov is saying, yeah, but I mean, these people are right. These people are actually, Rav is an expert. He's just, he doesn't have smicha because of the criteria of Eretz Yisrael, right? It's your, right? So I think, and I hear that point. I do. The only thing I would say is that there is this idea of like, smicha is like a certification. Like you've been approved. It's like an official process. So it's like the idea of like, let's say like, you know, person paskening shaila. There's idea of smicha. Like you would say just, bismanazah, you know, it's not the real smicha, it's the fake smicha, but there's idea of like it being certified, of like having a certificate. It comes from a particular rabbi, says that this guy can do bidan, shaila, things like that. So if you just let every person decide who's roi, who's not roi, like, look, there's no real reason a person who doesn't have smicha from some rabbi, bismanazah, can't paskin shaila if he knows the shaila. You understand? It's just the problem is like that system kind of, the system itself gets out of control. You know, so there is, it's just like you can't really, it's like, it's a nice ideal to say whoever is Roy should be done, all these things, and that really would be perfect if only the experts did it. But like once you set up a system like that, then basically there is no basis right to show anymore. Everybody can do the same thing, so long as you're an expert. Just, it gets out of control, you know? So there is a reason why the Torah says, just because you're an expert, you got to have smicha, you got to be approved. And the approval is a central organization which approves everybody and gives the smicha, and that's an only Eretz Yisrael, and that like limits the people running around saying I'm an expert, and being down cases and forcing people to listen to them even when they're not roy. Now it's true by limiting that and restricting that to Eretz Yisrael, you have this problem of chutz la'aretz, and the Sheikh Osayu is kind of the solution. We don't want to just say everything's half kavil. So long as you say you're an expert or you think you're an expert without any official certification, you can just do it. We don't just say that, because then it just, that'll get out of control. On the other hand, we don't say demand that in order to have Sarara to force people, you have to have smicha, because then people in Chutz La'aretz can't do it at all. So there's a compromise position where we limit the damage that they can do by limiting the reshus that they have to only the situation where it's really necessary. Chesion kiss and shchiyah. And even though they're not, you know, we get them the reshus, we say we demand that they be expert. Will that actually, you know, go out of control a little bit, maybe, but it won't be as bad as if they had full control and full authority to do everything, you know? Also, and I think this, you could bring back your guys' original point, is the fact that it is limited, it does retain this idea of the Beis Din Eretz Yisrael has the ultimate authority, they're the real experts, and it forces people who want to get the full mishpat of boshes and things like that, they have to go to Eretz Yisrael if they want it. So it does retain Eretz Yisrael as a center of authority. It maintains the idea that there is a system, there is certification, there is the approval. But in order to allow society and Chutz La'aretz to function, you have to give them this heter. You know, so in Mizmanazeh, you don't really have the central authority and whatever, in concept you do. Okay, so I think that's basically the point. There's a balance. There's basically a balance between maintaining the idea of smicha versus maintaining it too strongly, and nobody can do any mishpah whatsoever. Yeah. And I think, again, that the Kimla Megave brings out this point to some degree, that it shows you that you're trying to limit what these Dayanim are able to do entirely on their own. And if it's not Kimla Megave, then they're doing it entirely on their own. And then that's basically, we don't want them to do that. We want them essentially to be trying to follow the basic framework and criteria that are set up from the Mishpatim that are from Beis Din Eretz Yisrael. And it ends up showing you, yeah, but we don't consider when they look at a market to figure out a price, that's not considered doing it on their own. That's basically just checking the facts. That's not them going off on their own, doing their own thing. Okay, and Zev is suggesting that there's a very difficult Rashi. The first Rashi in the Sigya explains the whole thing. Kol Anishim Kevet, Hovet Davrashi and Katzafu, Ingo Venosabado. The time of Farsha Kaman. So Rashi quotes this idea of Davrashi and Katzaf, you can't do it in Bavel. It's a strange thing what Rashi is doing, because Chora, that's like the Havamin of Kol, you know, with the Gemara of Kimla Megave. Like minds are projecting, it doesn't work out. So why is he quoting that? Rashi really should say, because it's not shchiach and chesron kiss, or whatever. He should say it's shchiach. It's not shchiach, that's the problem. That's the Gemara's conclusion. What Zev is suggesting is that katzav really is what brings out the whole point here. That if it's not katzav, they can't do it. Meaning the people in Bavel, there's like Gemara is told before the Gemara knows anything. The point is, in Bavel, there's a limitation of what they're able to do. And if it's katzav, that means it's within the Katsum means it's like there's a fix, there's a limit, is within the framework of their power, the jurisdiction. And if it's in Katsum, means it's going beyond that, right? This is something that doesn't have a limit. It's an unlimited. If you have unlimited power, right, to do it at all the mishpatim, then fine. But over here, if it's it breaches the limits of what they're able to do. Katsav and Katsav. And even though the Gemara ends up showing you that that's not sufficient because going to the market shows you Kimla Megave, that's considered something that's Katsav or Katsav enough. Assuming those two terms are the same, Katsav and Kimla Megave, I'm assuming that. Maybe I shouldn't, I think. I think it's what it means. Between no power at all and having full power. It's a compromise of in between. Is there's limits, they have power, but there's limits to what the power is. So even though, yes, at the end of the day, the Gemara says that going to the market is within their abilities, but that's really what brings out the point that there's shlichus from Bnei Eretz Yisrael, but it's a limited shlichus. You know? Still bothers me. So even though there's chesmer kiss and it's not shchiach, you don't do the shlichus. Natosa says there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Beis on Beis, which says Xeris Chavalos is Milsa Chavalos, you need Mumchim, right? Mumchim. They said we don't do it in Chutzlaritz, right? So Natosa says it must be why not? There's Chesron and Kiss by Xela and Chavala, right? Our Gemara over here said Chavala itself, and Xela obviously has Chesron and Kiss. So Natosa says it must be that you're learning that they're not Shchiach. And Chavala clearly is not Shchiach. Har Gemara openly said that. It must be saying Gzeil is not Shchiach. Why is Gzeil not Shchiach? Presumably because it's like an Isser. Right? Hadas and Avos is Shchiach because that's common business. But Gzeil and Chavala, it's an Isser. You're not allowed to steal. You're not allowed to hit somebody else. So it must be Sintheras. So they're not so relatively uncommon. And therefore, you were not done them in Bavel. There's two problems with that. That's Tosa's problem. One is what Tosa openly says directly is it goes against multiple Gemaras. Which seem to say that in Bavel they are Dan Gzeilos, right? There's multiple Gemaras, which seem that there's in many places where there's a lot of cases where they seem to be Dan Gzeilos. And the only thing is, you have to say, you're going to be Dilchak, to say that all those cases dealing with either Batafas, where Bezin didn't use their authority, it's just one guy grabbed it, or you're going to say that it means they went to Eretz Yisrael to be down those cases, and they're Eretz Yisrael, they're Smukhim. But that's Dilchak, it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like in Bavel they really are being Dan Gzeilos, right? The second problem, which is Tosus has, besides for the fact that it seems like the Gemaras are being done, that you know, Gemara is really holding from these stories that the Gemara really, that really are you are being done, Gzeilos, is the problem is that Tosus knows that we're done in you know in Europe they're being done Gzeilos b'chol yom, right? So he ends at Tosus ma'isim b'chol yom shanu done in din Gzeilos. So what's going on if we're not allowed to do it except if you go to Eretz Yisrael or Tafas? Well, that's not true. We do it. So you have a problem with the minhag, the Masorah. Basically, it seems like it's against the, you know, put these two Gemaras together, you know, whatever. That Gemara Sanhedrin sounds like you don't do Gzeila, but we're done Gzeila all the time. So what gives? How do we do it? If we, I mean, so that's like, I think bothering Tosis, that's motivating a lot of the Tosis, because we know we do it, and now we're trying to figure out why we do it. Okay? So so basically, the key to this Tosis, the most interesting part really is this Yesh Mefarshim. Okay? And I think the Yesh Mefarshim are really explaining those Gemaras that say that you're done, that imply that you really are Dan Gzeilos in Bavel, and are the minhag that we have to actually be Dan Gzeilos. So Yesh Mefarshim is saying when the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Gzeilos v'chavalos the boy mumchem, so it doesn't mean Gzeilos alone requires mumchem, or chavalos alone requires mumchem. Meaning if you rob somebody, then you need mumchem, you need Eretz Yisrael. Or if you chavala, you nezek, you require mumchem. No, that's not what it means. Okay, it means, of course, chavala alone you do. That's our Gemara. It's not shchiach. Okay, but gzeila is shchiach, and there's chesron kiss. So we should judge gzeilos. What it means is, even though in general we are dan gzeilos because gzeilos is shchiach and chesron kiss, but gzeilos ayedei chavalos. When you have gzeila through chavala, for example, two people are fighting. One guy whacks the other one until he overpowers him, and then he steals his money. That's not so common. Okay? That's not so common. Okay, it's true. And one guy's wearing a blue shirt. The other guy is, 6 foot tall. And it's just kind of a crazy. The problem with this Tosis is what kind of thing is that? If you're saying, Gzeila, you're done. Now because the Gzeila occurred, because he got into a fight and one guy overpowered the other one and took his money. So like what category, what halachic category is that? If you're dang zelos, that's basically a case of zela. The chavala you don't have to occur, the fact they whacked him in the head, fine, that's not shchiach that people whack each other in the head. So chavala you don't do, but the gzela you do. But somehow you're saying yes, but this is gzela yedei chavala. How is that a halacha category? What is going on with this, right? And how is that? But essentially that's how Tosfos is reconciling the Gemara and Sanhedrin, that gzela and chavala, so you need mumchem, with the fact that we're dang zelos, and the Gemara by itself seems to have many stories where dang zelos. And essentially, the Yesh Mefarshim is his solution. I think it's funny he quotes as Yesh Mefarshim, but that seems to be a solution. That Gemara means Gzeil Seidei Chavalos. Okay, so we have to understand is what kind of category is that? How exactly does that work? And why is that sufficient? Why is that a legitimate way to read the Gemara in Sanhedrin? In theory, there's another question to define this Tosfos. Is it seems like he's going back and forth. Is Gzeil Shchiach or not? He starts off saying apparently it's not Shchiach. But then at the end of the day, he's holding it is Shchiach. And what's not Shchiach is Gzela Yidei Chavala. Gzela itself is Shchiach. So I don't know. I mean, you could try to think about that, define that. Is Gzela Shchiach or not? Seems like, seems like it's right around that border of Shchiach. I don't know how exactly we're going to define that. But in theory, that's Tosfos has two possibilities. The gzela, just stam gzela, is shchiach or not? Yeah. So Yaakov suggests another possibility. Is that in if you say the first answer of Tosfos, the first answer of Tosfos is that really we don't do gzela, and the reason those stories in the Gemara is because of Tafas, or because of they went to Eretz Yisrael. Then why Ma'aseh Mecholyam they do gzela? So you could say it wasn't shchiach then, but now because the society changed, people got poor, people became less ethical, so then gzela became more shchiach, and therefore we are done it. So that's like another possible approach to resolve. If you say the Ma'aseh Mecholyam consistent with the first answer of Tosfos, it's not bad. It's possible. You can't say it for the Gemara itself. The Gemara itself, you're gonna have to use Tafas or going to Yisrael. But that's a way to resolve our minhag of being doing it nowadays with the fact that the Gemara says you can't. It wasn't shchiach back then, but it is shchiach now. And then it would change. That would change. I think it makes sense. It's not bad.